Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Bob Surratt.
And I'm Marianne Murciano. It's Friday.
At last. And coming up in this hour, we'll check in with Johnny Jett and get some news about O'Hare and O'Hare delays and how to fix them. Scott Kleinberg with Social Media Business, and we'll talk about what folks are saying on social media about the big Supreme Court decision today. And a little later on, we'll meet someone who is part of Local Foods, Chicago's first wholesale distributor and retailer of strictly local foods from the Midwest's best farmers. First up, from the Tribune Blue Sky, reporter John Carpenter at the Merchandise Mart this afternoon. What is it, Tech Week, John?
It's Tech Week. It's a big expo they have every year for all the techies and the tech companies. Lots of speakers and, you know, booths with gadgets and software companies and lots of parties.
Okay.
Lots of parties. That's right. Where you are, right?
Well, I'm sort of near the parties. I'm near the food truck people.
All right. Well, we'll let you have lunch momentarily. Talk a little bit about this local delivery startup that sounds very interesting.
Yeah. Well, We Deliver is a Chicago company that's been around for a couple of years. Jimmy Odom is the founder, and he's one of these sort of really well-known, charismatic entrepreneur leaders in Chicago. He's everywhere, and he's a really great guy. And they were basically acquired by a company called Deliv, which is based in Silicon Valley. We Deliver, by using a mobile app and using really, you know, good software, they allow small companies, you know, small bakeries, restaurants, small merchants to offer delivery to their customers. They connect, you know, they connect with the We Deliver drivers and riders through a mobile app so they can do it efficiently. So it's a nice way for small companies to offer something that bigger companies offer, which is delivery service in the city. And so they were acquired by Deliv, which is kind of the same idea, but they tend to focus on big retailers and they're national and they have a little more size. So it seems like kind of a nice fit and a nice exit for We Deliver, although they'll still be, Jimmy Odom, I think, will still be part of the bigger company.
Is this the company that uses drivers the way that Uber and Lyft use drivers?
You know, kind of. I'm not sure that it's exact. You know, Uber and Lyft have these massive networks of drivers. I think We Deliver uses the same kind of connective platform that allows. You don't have the driver sitting in the back somewhere waiting for a delivery. It can find them quickly and deliver things quickly. And I think that's sort of the key to the efficiency that they're able to offer. You know, if you're a small store, it's pretty hard to say, okay, I'm going to have some delivery drivers. Unless you're, you know, like a small pizza place that has a lot of deliveries every night, it's pretty hard to, you know, to scale that. And so We Deliver by really making that system efficient. I wouldn't say it's exactly Uber-like, but it's that kind of platform that puts them in touch right away with people. It's like, yeah, you know, a driver might be a few blocks away. Sure, I'll pick that up and I'll take it there. And you know, by doing it efficiently, they can do it cheaply.
We mentioned that you're at the Tech Week in the Merchandise Mart, a celebration of technological advances in our world. And this story that you're covering, Tanvis, sounds
right.
Like quite a step forward. Explain this.
Well, we may have talked about this a while ago when it was starting out, but it's called a haptic technology. It basically uses sound waves to allow you to feel your touchscreen, and I don't mean like feel the screen, but if you have a picture of corduroy on your touchscreen and you ran your fingers across it, it would feel like corduroy. I mean, it's early in the technology, so I'm not sure it's that great, but I have felt it with my fingers. You can definitely feel a bumpy surface. Even though there are no real bumps on it, it's just an image. And so it's developed by professors at Northwestern, and they created a company called Tanvis, and they just raised $5 million. So it's the kind of company that really needs engineering and software developers, and so they're going to use that money to hire those people. But to me, one of the more interesting applications of this is in your car. You know, in the old days, we used to, you know, you'd fumble with the radio and hit the presets and change the radio without really taking your eyes off the road. Because you could feel it, you know, you knew where the knobs were. now we have these display screens, and you kind of have to look at them to change the radio. Mm-hmm. And what this technology can do is allow you to feel the edge of a dial or allow you to feel a knob. So to me, that's a really interesting, as a parent of a 16-year-old, that's an interesting technology that might make it a little less distracting to drive your car and change the radio or change the heat or find a defroster or things like that.
Of course, if you've got a burned-out disc jockey brain like me, you can actually discern which radio station you're listening to without really paying attention to who's on or what the content is, but the quality of the signal and the tone.
Right.
I can actually do that. It's one of my many useless skills. John, talk about this floating turntable. I saw a picture of it in the Tribune in the Blue Sky section the other day.
Yeah.
It's a vertical turntable, right?
Right. Well, speaking of old DJs, I mean, I'm not sure how this would work for DJs, but to me, since we're on the radio, the image that I see in my mind when I look at a picture of it is it's almost like a Ferris wheel. It's this beautiful wooden platform, but instead of a turntable laying on it, the turntable is sticking straight up so that when the record is playing, you're looking at the spinning disc just like you would be if you were looking at a Ferris wheel. And it's really beautiful. And the tone arm, which is what the needle is on, the real engineering trick is that they have to sort of spring load it so it kind of wants to gently press on the record. Otherwise, it would just kind of flop around because it's literally that tone arm is sticking straight up in the air. So it's spring loaded and it just gently. I did it myself, so I know that it works. And you just gently place it and it plays the record. And the other key thing that these guys did is they allowed it. They put a line out function in it, so you can just use it as a desktop thing, and the sound is nice because it's a nice wooden box. But really, you can also run it through a higher quality speakers, and it's if you see a picture of it, it's just a beautiful thing. And they they went on Kickstarter asking for $50,000, and they're well over $500,000 raised in 3 days, and they've still got another month. So this is going to be one of those big Kickstarter projects. And the nice thing is these guys, it's a company called Gramavox, and you may have heard of the earlier product, which is a Bluetooth speaker that uses an old-fashioned Victorian, gramophone horn. And that was very popular on Kickstarter, and they sold that, and they delivered it.
Do we know when it's going to come to market, or any guess, John?
Holidays, they think. What they're saying is if you buy it on the Kickstarter, or if you... It's $349. If you pledge $349, you're going to get one of these things, and they're committing to deliver it by the holidays. And given that this isn't their first thing that they've had to make, I think they should be able to come close to hitting that. If not hitting it directly, it's not one of these brand new Kickstarters that has never made anything.
We'll be looking for it. Marianne, take note.
Okay.
Put that on the Christmas shopping list. John Carpenter.
Thank you so much, John.
Covering the culture of the new economy, sponsored by Elk Grove Village. Time to check in to the business class. Our friend Johnny Jett. JohnnyJett.com is the website, and Johnny's the man for travel news. Where in the world are you, John?
Hi, John. Johnny Jett.
Me.
Are you there with us?
There he is.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm. I can hear you. Johnny, I am so obsessed with this one column that you wrote, this one piece that you wrote about the 12 things you need to know before you travel to Europe, because it's not just about traveling to Europe. These tips, I'm going to take these home with me and just read them for any time I travel.
I like it. I put it on Facebook. I was surprised. I had over 100 shares on it.
Give us the one that most people wouldn't know about, Johnny.
Let's see. One that most people don't know about. I'm looking at them real quick. I'd say call your credit card company in advance. They should know that. But when you travel internationally, you need to call your credit card company, because these days they're putting the kibosh on any foreign transactions, unless you're in the system that you're traveling on those dates and in those countries. And don't go on to their website and do it. My wife did that. She has a Canadian bank, and she did that to come here to L.A., and she couldn't use her credit card, or so she says she couldn't use her credit card. But Anyway, so that's one big one.
Okay, but, you know, I think that we need to have an entire seminar on how to pack light and what not to pack.
Go to JohnnyJet.com and you can get all that information.
Yeah, next time 12. He's here, he needs to come with a piece of luggage and then pack it.
You should have my wife do that. My wife is now the queen of packing. She used to be terrible, and now she just all she does is carry on. But my other tip that people don't really know that really drives me nuts is always pay in local currency. So when they swipe your credit card overseas, sometimes they'll say, oh, would you rather pay in U.S. dollars, making it seem like it's so much easier for us. But in reality, they're charging you a much higher exchange rate. So always pay in local currency.
Good tip. And talking about carry-on, explain what's going on with this, Johnny, because some airplanes no longer have enough space in the overhead bins. The International Air Transport Association was trying to get carry-on bags to conform to a certain size. What's going on here?
Well, they came out with that a couple weeks ago, and that was quickly, stopped. They're like, the airline said, we're not going to do it. I mean, that's because all the travelers, like, we're not going to go out and buy all new bags, which were supposed to be out 21% less in size. But the problem is, the airline started charging for bags back in 2008. And once they started charging for bags, except Southwest Airlines, everyone wants to bring the bag on. I always carry on because I don't like to wait around at a baggage claim for a half hour. And I don't even get charged baggage because I fly so much on the airlines, I have elite status. But the problem is, if you don't get on the plane early, including elite status flyers, your bag's not going to go. You're going to have to check it, and then you're going to have to wait around.
Mm-hmm. And then Delta's got this trial program to let airline staff load passengers' carry-on bags. And I guess the thinking there is it'll be more efficient.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. They have it on about 100 flights right now. They're just testing it. They're supposed to expand. So they have, it's called early valet. So what they'll do is, if you're out in the gate area and they see your bag, they'll say, hey, would you like us to load your bag for you on the plane above your seat? Which is, it's a great idea. I just don't see it happening. People are going to be like, why are you taking my bag? Or it's still going to cause a jam up. The reason why is airlines want to get those planes turned around as quick as possible. And one of the big problems are carry-on bags. Everyone is trying to get their bag on there and there's not enough room. So then they have to check them and then the plane is late.
Okay, so those are really great tips if you have luggage and you have the carry-on. But then when you do have to check your bags, there are places now, like, for example, Las Vegas, there is no curbside checking and there are no porters. They've fired everybody to help you get your bags out. So I have known people who've had to, walk out of the airport, each of them carrying, two checked bags plus carry-on plus a purse. And is that a trend? Are we going to be seeing that in Chicago and in other airports?
That people are going to be carrying their bags?
Yeah, that there's no curbside check-in or porters to help.
First of all, unless you're traveling overseas for a long trip, there's really no reason to bring a lot of stuff, or if you're moving. So, I think Americans first need to just stop taking so much stuff. And that will help everything. But if not, I think, I still see porters around. Toronto Airport, they have porters you can hire. Miami, I see porters. L.A., they still have curbside check-in and all that stuff. I never use it. Because it takes time and it costs more money. So the secret is, and I used to be the same way, I used to check way too much stuff. You just need to, stop bringing everything, including the kitchen sink, with you.
And finally, Johnny, there's a story in the news today about O'Hare. It's the busiest airport again, but it's also number one in delays. And I was surprised to read about this this airplane, the Airbus 380, that is supposed to be very efficient and great for long flights. And O'Hare doesn't have the gates for these planes anymore. So, and I know you're not a big O'Hare fan, are you?
No, I mean, I'm not. I'm sorry. I like Rick Bayless's restaurant, and that's about it.
And you like coming here.
I do love coming in, and I love being able to take the L train right from the airport. But, I think O'Hare has 9 out of 10 of the most delayed flights in America, which is ridiculous. And the thing with the A380, I love the A380. It's a beautiful plane. It's a double-decker all the way through. It's quiet. but not every airport can handle it. It's so big. Actually, I just read a story today, Emirates flight A380 from Dubai to Sydney had to do emergency landing in Sri Lanka, Colombo, where, you know, they don't have gates for it. So they have to leave that plane on the ground, and they have to put the passengers back on other Emirates flights back to Dubai and then back to Sydney. So,
and you can avoid multiple stops with that plane, right? Because it can fly long range.
No, that's not so much the reason. It's just that it can handle so many more people. The way it's configured, it could handle up to 800 people if they want it, but most have it handling about 550.
A quick question from one of our listeners before we let you go. What's the best airline to fly to Toronto from Chicago?
Well, Porter Airlines is a great airline that not a lot of people know about. And they go into the city airport in Toronto, which is you can almost walk into the hotels. I mean, it's just they have a free bus right into the city from there. It's 10 minutes. It's much better than Toronto Pearson. And that's the airline you want to take.
JohnnyJet.com for more. And always good to talk to you. We need more time with you. We need to figure something out because you have too much information.
Too much good information.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me. And make sure you sign up to my newsletter. It's free.
All right.
That's right.
JohnnyJet.com.
And it's full of really interesting things.
Talk to you next week. Happy travels.
Thanks. You too. Take care.
Let's get to social media business from the So Social column of the Tribune. Scott Kleinberg is here. How you doing, Scott?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Marianne.
Let's get right to the buzz about gay marriage. And Facebook's doing something, and Google, right?
Yeah. Facebook's one is really cool. If you go to, if you're signed into Facebook, and you go to facebook.com/celebratepride, all one word, it will take your profile photo. That's the smaller of the two photos, not the big long one, the smaller photo. And it'll put a rainbow shading behind it to celebrate the decision.
I just did it. It looks great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's very, it's like a sheer rainbow over your picture.
Yep.
And very cool.
And the thing that's really cool about it is usually in the past, people would do things like that on their own. They would make their own. They'd upload it. But this is the first time Facebook has done its own automated system kind of thing.
Good for them. And Google?
Yep. Google has like a little thing. If you type in gay marriage into the search bar, I think it's just on desktop, you'll see the result returned with it's like a string of cartoon characters, and they all represent the different colors of the pride flag, and they're just kind of strung across the top of the result page. So it's really cool, too.
Talking about diversity, it appears Facebook does have some work to do, don't they?
Yeah. They released some new data, and they said that they hired 2,897 employees over the last 12 months, but the company's ratio overall of male to female employees just moved to 1%, 68% male, 32% female, compared to 69% male and 31% female the same time last year. And what was really interesting about it is Facebook acknowledged right away. They said that they, you know, they're happy that there's been an uptick, but clearly they have some work that still needs to be done.
They've been doing a little work in the app department, and it sounds like that button, the new link button, is handy.
It is, and it's one of those things that you might not even notice. It's just kind of, it's really small. But I think it can be powerful. If you updated your Facebook app, I saw it on iPhone. I'm assuming it's for Android, too. If you updated your Facebook app yesterday, now when you go and you press the button to upload a photo or to put your location, there's a little icon for a link. And when you click on the link, you can type in a subject or you can type in a media publication, and it'll pop up all the things that are super popular on Facebook that people are sharing. So you can type in, you know, WGN Radio and see what pops up, and then you can share the link directly from there.
And talk about Facebook's facial recognition technology. Is this the same as like what iPhoto uses on Faces, for example?
This is something similar.
And
but
does Faces even exist under the new iPhoto
I think
format?
I can't find it. I think it exists in some fashion, but I don't think it's as pronounced as it was in iPhoto.
Yeah,
I'd have to look to see exactly where it is. Apple's trying to bake it in. This thing from Facebook is really different. This is a new thing they're doing where they're trying to recognize people without your face. So they're trying to take other things that are common to the photo.
You're
and
kidding.
Use that. No,
like the background? No. So like if I take a lot of pictures in my kitchen,
yep.
And then it's like a new person, or it's a puppy or whatever, and then it would recognize my kitchen.
Well, that's
that would be very scary.
That's
and
part
creepy.
Of it. That's part of it. Like the example they gave, like just using Mark Zuckerberg, is it's very easy to pick him out because he's always wearing a gray t-shirt. Now, there has to be more sophistication to it than just anybody with a gray t-shirt is going to pop up as Mark Zuckerberg. But just to show that, I mean, it was 83% accurate. And while in the tech world, 83% might not be great, 83% accuracy without looking at a face and knowing it's you, that's pretty special.
Yeah, that totally is very creepy.
Yes. Creepy and cool at the same time, yes.
Good news for Jon Stewart fans today.
Yes, they started it. This just started at 11 a.m. Central Time, where they are streaming Comedy Central is, streaming every episode of Jon Stewart from the first day until till the end. And it's going to go for 42 days, and they dubbed it the Month of Zen.
That's what they should have done with Letterman, right?
Well, they're not into the online world as much as Comedy Central. August 6th is Jon Stewart's final night, isn't it?
Yep, that's exactly right.
All right, and why don't we talk a little bit about what's happening with Apple and the and when you get an error when you try to update your software that tells you you don't have enough space.
Oh, yeah, this is a really great thing. So with the next operating system that's coming out next in the fall, iOS 9, what's happening is they're going to make it so your phone will automatically, it will no longer say you don't have enough space to update this software. It will automatically in the background remove, it'll update, but it'll remove apps if it's necessary and then put them back on. So what happens when you update your
software?
Well,
then how could you put them back on if you don't have the space?
Well, that's the beauty of it. They're going to take the apps off your phone. We don't know how they're going to determine which ones yet. I'm guessing they'll determine it by whether you don't use this app very often. They'll take it off temporarily, let you update the software so you can get the amount of space that you need, and then put it back.
But how is there, if there's not space before, how is there space afterwards?
And at that's a great question. When you actually, if something says you need 3 gigabytes of space to update this software, it's not usually 3 gigabytes. It just needs it to actually put it in the system. Once it comes in, that 3 gigabytes could be 1 gigabyte. It doesn't really need all three.
Oh,
it just tells you that
it's for processing.
That's a really good way of looking at it. So it doesn't know the difference when you have 3 or 1 or whatever the case is.
So the result will be that your phone automatically will do this so that you'll one day pick up your phone and you'll think you know where your apps are, and they're not there, and you don't know what's happening, and then you think you're going nuts, and then all of a sudden they'll be there again.
Well, let's hope it doesn't happen that way, because if it happens the way I'm reading it, and I'm with you, if it happens the way that I'm reading it, all this would happen in the background while it's rebooting, while it's doing all that stuff. You wouldn't even notice it was gone. Here's hoping, but I can't promise that.
So Social is the column in the Tribune, Scott Kleinberg. We'll see you next week.
Have a great weekend.
You
Thanks.
Too. Maureen, you're going to like this. We're going to talk about strictly local foods from the Midwest's best farmers. Gary Lazarski is here, the CEO of Mighty Vine and General Counsel of Chicago Local Foods. Gary, let's start with Mighty Vine. Tell us about that venture.
Glad to be here. Mighty Vine is going to be growing premium local tomatoes for the Chicago market, founded on the simple belief that the best tomatoes are grown close to home. Anybody that's in Chicago for most of the year, except for maybe 6 weeks in the summer, realizes you can't get a good tomato. And that's because they're coming from far away.
The tomatoes taste like potatoes to me.
They taste like water. Yeah, they taste like nothing.
They don't taste like anything.
We're here to help.
Okay, so are you talking about organic tomatoes? Is that?
They're not technically considered organic because it's a hydroponic farm, so they grow in an inert medium. It's not an organic medium. But everything else is organic or better in terms of the natural pest control. We have ladybugs that zoom around the greenhouse to take care of all the bugs.
So they're pesticide free.
Bumblebees.
Is what you're saying.
We'll use a pesticide only in a rare instance to prevent any blight from getting to the rest of the greenhouse, but the tomatoes that are for sale will be pesticide.
Where is the operation?
It's out in Rochelle, Illinois, 80 miles straight west of Chicago. So we'll be able to reach all the restaurants and grocers pretty quickly.
Okay, describe the taste difference. Because right now, as I think about it, tomato that tastes like a tomato, my mouth starts to water.
Right. And if that's the tomato that you've got in your mind is that delicious midsummer tomato or maybe a memory from your grandmother's backyard. But then you go to the place for lunch down the street and you get this pale orange thing that you either peel off your sandwich or take out of your salad. These tomatoes are delicious, high sugar content, left on the vine, even better source of lycopene than ones that are picked when they're green and hard and shipped across the country. So they're better nutritionally and flavorful.
All right, we want them now. Where do we get them?
They'll be ready in October. So right now you're going to get plenty of great local tomatoes, and you can buy those at Local Foods, which is having its grand opening. That's the other company. Local Foods is a wholesaler and retailer in Chicago, opening at 1427 West Willow. Tuesday at noon is the grand opening.
And are those organic, the local food?
Local Foods products? Will have organic tomatoes, yes. And they don't, not all their products are. They're all sourced from the Midwest, and they're all responsibly grown. So there's been a big move lately towards responsibly grown.
What is the difference between responsibly grown and not responsibly grown?
Well, for instance, something could be organic, but it's coming from the Central Valley of California, where you've got a great water shortage and you're transporting it thousands of miles. So the point being, organic isn't necessarily a label that makes it very good for the environment. It's something that responsibly grown is something that farmers have been doing for years. They're great stewards of the land, especially in the Midwest, and they use the best agricultural practices, minimal use of pesticides, and all other responsible
growing
practices.
So what's not responsible? Who's not doing the responsible growing?
Well, I would leave that to the other folks, but I'm sure some folks would say people who are drenching the ground with, you know, Roundup or other things like that. Big agriculture.
Now you just lost Orion.
Sorry about
that,
Orion.
Let's go back to
on that one because I prefer having fruits and vegetables
has its place.
Without worms. You know,
and a lot of people do. Well, Local Foods, is it a store? Is it the beginning of a chain? What's the story on that operation?
It's not the beginning of a chain. It's a wholesale food operation that's been operating for 2 years out of a temporary warehouse. We just completed construction at 1427 West Willow, 17,000 square foot space to service Chicago restaurants and retailers. And then we'll have a little retail front end, a wholesale showroom where chefs and the public can come in and see all the fresh Midwest local produce, meats, dairy, cheeses, grains, the whole range.
That's Tuesday that opens up?
Tuesday at noon, 1427 West Willow.
Well, good luck with that. That sounds like a great place. And that's Chicago Local Foods and Mighty Vine. We're ready for those great tomatoes at any time. Our thanks to Gary Lazarski. Good luck to you,
Thank
Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Bob Merriam.